I'm Gabrielle Jackson, and this is The Full Story. On the 3rd of November, Americans will head to the ballot box and cast their votes in the presidential election. It's a strange year for an election, with voters and presidential candidates being forced into lockdown. But in recent weeks, that's changed, and the race to the White House is officially on.
Hello, 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 Florida.
And hello, Janesville, and hello, Wisconsin.
And I've always believed in Michigan.
I'll tell you what, Ohio, how good have you been?
President Donald Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden have been travelling across the country to win over voters.
We need to turn out and support for Democrats down the line here in Pennsylvania.
But what really matters in the upcoming election is not which candidate gets the most votes across America, but who secures the 270 electoral colleges needed to get to the White House. And as we learned 4 years ago, it's anyone's game.
You know what? 16 days from now, we're going to win the state of Nevada. We're going to win 4 more years of the White.
Today, the road to the presidency for Joe Biden and Donald Trump. It's Friday, the 23rd of October. Anushka Astana is the host of Today in Focus, where this episode first aired. She's talking to Lauren Gambino, political correspondent for Guardian US.
You've been following Joe Biden's campaign, and I feel like for us to understand his possible path to the White House, we first need to understand how Donald Trump got there in 2016, despite losing the popular vote by 3 million votes, which means... To start, we need you to explain the Electoral College.
So every state gets a set of electoral votes, and that depends on the state's population. So bigger states like California and Texas have much more electoral votes than smaller states in population. So like North Dakota and South Dakota have very few electoral votes. But proportionally, it's not exactly even. So for example, California, you get one electoral vote per every 718,000 people. But in Wyoming, you get one vote for every 193,000 people.
The Electoral College helps Republicans. The fact that every state gets two senators helps Republicans. Mike Enzi of Wyoming represents 287,000 people. Kamala Harris represents 20 million. Why is Wyoming even a state?
So as you can see, some states, they don't matter more, but they don't, there's not equal representation with the Electoral College. And obviously that's been a source of controversy for many decades here.
If you look at our recent history, we've had several candidates, nominees, who have won the popular vote and lost the Electoral College. What does that say? And it says that an anachronism that was designed for another time no longer works. If we've moved toward one person, one vote. That's
and the reason for that is that whoever wins a state by however few votes gets all the Electoral College votes. And particularly in large states, that can add up really quickly towards the 270 needed to win the presidency.
Yes. So as an example of the winner-takes-all system, Hillary Clinton narrowly lost Florida to Donald Trump, but he took all 29 of the state's electoral votes. It's a huge win for any candidate, but he only narrowly beat Hillary Clinton there.
So basically, the American system is a bit like our winner-takes-all system, but massively amplified, because once you win that state, as you say, you get a huge number of votes, which explains why it's potentially unrepresentative of the popular vote. And you've already mentioned Florida, which is one of the real keys to explaining how Trump took power. Just tell us which other states and how many voters actually got him to the White House.
So beyond Florida, there were three key Midwestern states that had traditionally voted for Democrats, and Democrats considered them in 2016 the blue wall states, meaning they were in the bank for Democrats. That was their big mistake.
And we won Wisconsin, and we won Michigan. and we won Pennsylvania, right? And that person is doing the map. And that person was saying for months that there's no way that Donald Trump can break the blue wall, right?
In these states, Donald Trump just pulled out razor-thin victories over Hillary Clinton. Collectively, Trump won those three states by less than 80,000 votes, and that gave him 46 electoral votes. And, you know, honestly, if Hillary Clinton had just done 1 point better in those states, she'd probably be president right now.
Okay, so it's 4 years on, and Biden knows what went wrong last time.
I spent all my time in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota.
Those are the states that did it.
Look,
she didn't go to those states. She didn't go to Wisconsin.
I think that was a mistake.
Yeah.
And with that knowledge, he had set up his campaign headquarters in Pennsylvania, where he grew up. But when COVID hit, he shifted famously to the basement of his current home in Delaware.
Over the past 6 weeks, Joe Biden has been running his presidential campaign from his basement. The presumptive Democratic nominee has held at least 15 live streams from his Delaware home since the coronavirus pandemic began.
Making a show of being responsible and sticking to the rules. He started to travel more now. And if we want to think about his potential path to the White House, it presumably has to start with the states that are safest for the Democrats. What are they and how many electoral votes do they carry?
So there's a few states that you know are in your bank if you're a Democrat. And those are famously California, New York, and those are big, important electoral college states. So that gives you a boost to start with. Then you've got other states like Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Maryland, which also come with a lot of electoral votes and help get their base going. You know, beyond that, there's another handful of states that they'll almost certainly win. But I think if you're the Biden campaign, you start by looking at where Hillary Clinton won in 2016. She won 227 electoral college votes. So you're looking at how do I build on that? And you also don't want to lose any of the states that she won.
Are there any states where Clinton won narrowly in 2016 that the Democrats could lose this time?
If there were one, it would be Minnesota.
Minnesota's calendar has been filling up with big-name visits.
Hello, Minnesota. We love you.
Since March, candidates on the presidential tickets have spotlighted the state eight times.
Hello, Minnesota.
Minnesota's a Midwestern state. It's consistently voted for Democrats, and it did so in 2016, even as its neighbors voted for Donald Trump. I mean, it was a very narrow margin again in Minnesota for Hillary Clinton. And so the Trump campaign thought they have a really good chance in Minnesota. And so they've been investing money. Trump has talked publicly about trying to win over Minnesota. The thing is, Joe Biden is not Hillary Clinton. He is, according to polling, far more popular than she was. And he does far better with the certain demographic groups that Trump did well with in 2016. And so I think Minnesota is going to be a lot harder for Trump than he thinks. And sort of for demographic reasons, not electoral college reasons. But if Biden is losing Minnesota, then he's lost the Midwest almost certainly. And he probably has no path to the White House.
Assuming that he wins all of the votes that Hillary Clinton one last time, let's talk about the route beyond that. Presumably, the first thing he needs to focus on is the states that you mentioned at the start that Clinton unexpectedly lost, states like Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has 20 electoral college votes. That's quite a lot. And you've seen Biden travel there during this campaign. Tell me about the state.
Pennsylvania is an interesting state because it has two big population centers around Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. And these are, at least in Philadelphia, it's a pretty diverse city. Democrats do very well in big cities and sort of increasingly in the suburbs around these big cities. These sort of traditional working class coal miners in the state, they used to always vote for the Democrats because of Democratic support for unions. And in 2016, Trump really appealed to them by promising to revive coal.
Who are you voting for?
Donald Trump.
Who are you voting for?
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
No question.
No question.
No question.
And you're going to base your decision on what?
I love my freedom of my guns, and I love my job in a coal mine.
Hillary Clinton also made what's kind of in retrospect known as a pretty big gaffe. She said that she was going to end coal mining.
I'm the only candidate which has a policy about how to bring economic opportunity using clean, renewable energy as the key into coal country. Because we're going to put a lot of coal miners and coal companies out of business.
What she meant was she wanted to transition from coal to cleaner energy. But the way she said it, the Trump campaign was able to seize on her gaffe and just run ads saying that. And that really hurt her in a state where people have lost jobs.
What I said was totally out of context from what I meant, because I have been talking about helping coal country for a very long time.
It was also because she didn't turn out African Americans who live in Philadelphia. And Joe Biden's trying to thread that needle. Joe Biden is originally from Scranton, as we mentioned, and so he's got some connection to the state. Being associated with it, being a white man, I think is an important distinction. He is just doing better with some of these voters who think that the Democratic Party has become too elite, the party of the coasts, who don't represent working class men and women who do make up a significant share of Pennsylvania's votes. And so he appeals to them, and he's really trying to appeal to them while also trying to reach these African-American voters, increasingly Latino voters in the state, and suburban voters.
But clearly, this is a state that's going to be really hard fought over. The Republicans are really going for Biden's campaign over issues like fracking, aren't they? I mean, are those sort of messages having an impact in the state?
They're certainly not helpful. And you can tell that because Biden said clearly, looking into the camera, I will not ban fracking.
With a clean energy strategy, that is a place for the energy workers right here in Western Pennsylvania. I am not banning fracking.
And he said that again explicitly in several speeches that he's made in Pennsylvania since. And it's because during his debate during the primary, he kind of fumbled an answer and gave Republicans an easy clip that does look like he is saying his plan is to ban fracking.
No more, no new fracking. And by the way,
which Joe Biden there is telling the truth? I mean, they fact check President Trump for everything. Which one?
But if you look at his platform online and everything he said, that's not what he wants to do. And he says he understands how important the industry is to Pennsylvania. Trump, even as recently as last week, has been tweeting about Biden wanting to ban fracking. But it's going to come down to, you know, who do people believe?
Okay, so he wants to get a higher turnout among African-American voters. We know that failing to do that hurt Clinton badly. And he wants to try to win back white working class former Democrats who became key to Trump. But we know many of them remain passionately supportive of the president, not just in Pennsylvania, but in those two Midwest states that got Trump over the line. Michigan with its 16 electoral college votes and Wisconsin with 10. What other types of voter is Biden targeting in these states to try to secure a path to the White House?
He also is focusing on the suburbs where women and men with the college education are increasingly turning away from the Republican Party. And then in some of these states, it's really important to mention seniors. These states, they're overrepresentative of 65 and older voters who are, you know, bedrock Republicans traditionally. But these are also voters who've been really vulnerable to the coronavirus, and they're really upset, at least according to polling and some anecdotal evidence that we've found, very upset with the way Trump has handled this virus. And so we're starting to see him lose senior voters, and that could truly be devastating, especially in these states.
How much time is Biden spending in these states, and how much money is he spending?
These are probably the states he's spent the most time in. He's been to Pennsylvania several times. That's where their campaign is spending millions of dollars. They're blanketing the state with ads. And, you know, it's interesting because they really are targeting, and with different messages, each of these constituencies. So you see sort of the Democrats recognize how broad their coalition is and how little numbers from each of these groups will make a big difference.
Okay, and what is his overriding message in these states to try and take on Trump's attack on Democrats, describing them as elite.
Especially in the Midwest, he's rolled out this campaign message, which is Scranton versus Park Avenue.
And I really mean it because, you know, the way we were raised up here in this area, awful lot of hard work and people busted their neck. All they ask for is a shot, just a shot. All that Trump could see from Park Avenue is Wall Street.
And the idea is that he's a working class kid from Scranton, Pennsylvania, running against this billionaire who made his money in these elite circles of New York City and who doesn't actually care about the working man.
So clearly, Biden is heavily focused on these states, using that messaging to try to turn Trump's rhetoric on its head, to try to make the president out to be the elite one. He's even going beyond these states that Clinton lost narrowly and pushing for votes in places like Ohio, which was once a classic swing state, but won convincingly by Trump in 2016. And we're going to be hearing more about that later this week. But given that we can see that Trump fever is still pretty passionate in some of these areas, what happens if Biden can't win them back? Is that game over? Or are there other ways to get enough Electoral College votes?
It would make it very hard. But changing demographics across the country have made some sort of Republican strongholds much more competitive this cycle. So specifically, Biden is really looking at Arizona and North Carolina. These are two states that are increasingly diverse and have in the past mostly voted for Republicans. At the presidential level, North Carolina is the exception. It did vote once for Barack Obama, but in 2016, it went for Donald Trump. And so it's going to be a big challenge for Biden to win there. But there are definitely signs that he could pull this off. And similarly, in Arizona, you've got Latinos who are turning 18 and voting for the first time. You've got a lot of suburban women who have left the Republican Party.
So they talk about the suburban women. And somebody said, I don't know if the suburban woman likes you. I say, why? But we had this. I love you, too. They said they may not like the way you talk, but I'm about.
And so that's why I decided to go to Arizona to do some reporting.
Hello, Arizona. It's great to be back.
And I know Arizona is also where you grew up. It's a state with 11 electoral college votes, so not insignificant, one more than Wisconsin. Tell me about what's happening there.
So Arizona is a pretty big Western state. Politically, it's Republican, but it's got a libertarian bent, like many of these Western states. I grew up in Phoenix. It's a desert. It's really hot. And this, for decades, has been Republican stronghold. But in the Trump era, these voters, many of them white college educated, are starting to leave the Republican Party. They don't like Trump. They don't like who he's become. And they're angry at Republicans for adopting his positions.
And Biden is 3 points ahead in Arizona, where the president campaigns today.
While President Trump won this state 4 years ago, the pandemic is now really shaping the race.
In so many ways, Maricopa County, which is where Phoenix is possibly a foreshadow of what could come, because decades ago, Maricopa County elected a sheriff named Joe Arpaio.
He's known as America's toughest sheriff for his crackdowns on illegal immigration and petty crime.
He brags about making prisoners eat bologna sandwiches so rotten the meat has turned green.
And Joe Arpaio, he didn't start this way, but he realized in his career that being anti-immigrant was really successful. He could really strike fear in the heart of many of these sort of white suburban parents who, you know, were afraid of undocumented immigrants coming into their state, you know, taking over their schools and using social benefits that should be available to them.
As far as the illegal immigrants coming into our country, that our criminals.
This was the sort of fear that he instilled. And so as a sheriff, he started executing these raids on restaurants that used undocumented workers. And he really just had this, you know, he was a showboat too. He loved the media. He would say anything to the press. He'd invite the press along on these sweeps of undocumented workplaces. And so, as you can see, there's some similarities perhaps with the president. And sure enough, he was one of the first people to endorse Donald Trump in 2016. He campaigned for him.
He's done a great job for the people of Arizona. He's very strong on borders, very strong on illegal immigration.
But in fact, when he was running for re-election in 2016, as Donald Trump won, shocked the nation, Sheriff Joe Arpaio lost. And that means that Maricopa County voters are just over him. They don't like his style. They don't like his approach. And it might be a warning for the Republican Party that Trumpism doesn't work in these diverse, changing states where, you know, Latinos increasingly make up a bigger share of the population. And these are people's neighbors and friends and, you know, schoolmates. And so this anti-immigrant attacks, they are less potent, they're less successful, and increasingly pushing Republican voters away from the party.
That's amazing to think that there's been that level of shift in a state that was once pretty solidly Republican. I mean, you said you grew up there. Does it feel like a less Republican state now?
Yes, and it's like we're meeting of these two trends, and one is demographics, and it's been so slow coming and slow changing. But the political shift away from the Republican Party has happened really fast. It's just happened in the last few years. And so, you know, I can tell you just anecdotally, some of my mother's friends who would never really have considered themselves politically active, but were probably, people like to say in Arizona, John McCain Republicans, meaning Republican, but, you know, not extreme. And now, you know, I'm thinking of one of her friends who's volunteering for Biden, making calls every single day, marched in the Women's March, and then has since just been really involved in politics. And so I think there was this almost radicalization of these suburban women, women who just maybe didn't think Trump was serious in 2016 and now are so angry with the repercussions of his presidency.
Next, could the result of the election all come down to Florida?
It sounds as if what's changing in Arizona and perhaps other states that is moving them towards purple is demographic change. But it also feels as if that would be a few years off if it wasn't for other voters also questioning Trump. And you mentioned suburban women. How important is any change of opinion among groups like them in this election?
I think they're critical. We know in 2018 that Kyrsten Sinema, the senator, probably couldn't have won without the support of some of these former Republican or traditionally Republican suburban women. This turn away from the Republican Party by women is helping accelerate some of these longer-term trends.
Are there any other states that we wouldn't normally be talking about that we are in 2020? And if so, why?
There's Georgia, and that's because in 2018, Stacey Abrams, who would have been the first Black female governor of an American state, just narrowly lost.
But do you think that there was deliberate interference in the election?
Yes. And I believe it began 8 years ago with the systematic disenfranchisement of more than a million voters.
Democrats still believe she should be governor, that it was a matter of voter suppression. And so it's kind of a deeply sore subject, but she came so close. The population of young, diverse, progressive voters is just growing. And Democrats really do see an opportunity there. I don't know if this cycle it will flip. It's a very hard thing to do. And Trump certainly really appeals, especially to evangelicals. And Texas is kind of the white whale. I don't see Texas going for Biden this cycle. But when you think about states like Arizona, it's hard to see Texas not being there, you know, in 4, 8, 12 years.
But when we talk about these states like Georgia, Biden's not pouring money into it, is he? I mean, if he were to win Georgia, it would be an absolute landslide.
Right. If Biden's winning Georgia, he's winning across the country. It's not a place that he's targeting this cycle. I think he knows his path. He needs to focus on the Midwest and on Florida.
And good you mention Florida, because it's pretty clear that both camps see it as a critical state. They're both spending a lot of time and money there. Trump, of course, won it in 2016. From what you've told me, there are options for Biden without Florida. The Democrats were 43 electoral college votes short of 270 in 2016. There are 46 votes up for grabs in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Without them, of course, it would be very hard for Biden, but we've also discussed other states with shifting demographics like Arizona. But if he could win Florida, that would be 29 electoral votes in one go. Would that close down Donald Trump's route to the White House?
Donald Trump's path to the White House is probably narrower than Joe Biden's, and that's because it seems like Biden has more states to play with this cycle than Trump does. For Donald Trump, he must win Florida. It's very hard to imagine a scenario where Trump loses Florida and wins the presidency. He would have to pull out a win somewhere we were not even expecting or not even paying attention to. Florida's a weird state. I don't think any pollster will tell you they know what's going to happen there. It's a state that goes back and forth, famously decided the 2000 election.
Many point to the disputed 2000 presidential election, which President Bush won by a margin of just over 500 votes in Florida. Democrats contend confusing ballots in Palm Beach County and other ballot problems cost Al Gore the election.
Democrats have good support base in these big cities around Miami, Tallahassee. It's a retiree state, so they've got support now among senior voters who are upset with Trump over his handling of the coronavirus. There's an influx of Puerto Ricans who are, of course, furious with Trump's handling of the hurricanes that just devastated the island. The question with them is, are they registering to vote? Will they turn out? For Donald Trump, who actually has moved his residence, he's officially a Florida voter. In 2016, he did incredibly well with seniors. He also does so well among Cuban Americans who are traditionally Republicans. So it's like very balanced in terms of who these two candidates need to win. And right now we're seeing polls showing a really tight race. Remarkably, Trump and Biden are tied among Latino voters in the state. So for all these reasons, it's just incredibly uncertain how it'll turn out. And it's so central to Donald Trump's path to victory.
Lauren, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it for today. Many thanks to Anushka Rastana and Lauren Gambino. This episode first aired on Today in Focus, The Guardian's global news podcast. If you liked it, you can find more by searching for Today in Focus wherever you get your podcasts. This episode was produced by Sam Colbert. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier and additional production by Miles Herbert. The executive producers of Today in Focus are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. Thanks for listening. Full Story will be back tomorrow.